You're listening to A Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott alongside Dennis O'Hara. Dennis, you've seen those familiar carts that set up at various neighborhoods. But if you're new to the area, then it may be your first time hearing about King of Pops. It was an idea born from tasting a similar fruit pop while traveling in Central America. And I believe we talked about this off air. Mm-hmm. I'm a chocolate sea salt, whatever that
Me
is,
too.
Fanatic. It's just
Me too.
That's just my opinion. Yep. The success of King of Pops creates new challenges for a business. We'll talk about that with its CEO, Steve Kars. He joins us now to talk about how the business has grown. Steve, thanks for coming in and taking the time.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for inviting me.
You have the King of Pops shirt on. Do you have any sea salt King of Pops in your little bag there?
Unfortunately, no. I don't have a cooler in my back pocket.
Business is good. We understand.
Yeah.
Take us through how all this came about. So you're in Central America, you're chilling, and someone offers you a fruit pop. You say, I'm going to take this back to Atlanta. Did it happen like that?
Essentially, my oldest brother was an anthropologist, so he was doing his field work, and we would regularly go down there to visit him. And he, as a good tour guide, he would always take us to the cool places, you know, and this is something we kind of just started to seek out and talk about. But years before it even really happened, we were just dreaming about it.
And so that dream, and it starts with a dream, as any business owner would tell you, the dream now became a reality. Let's talk about the neighborhood with the carts. And, mm-hmm. and was that just part of the plan, or did you also see that in Central America as well?
That is certainly how they were doing it down there. I would like to say that we were smart enough to think we knew what we were doing, but really we just couldn't afford. We wanted to have like a brick and mortar, like an ice cream shop, except selling popsicles, and found out we needed a grease trap and 3-year lease and all this kind of stuff, and it just got to be something that I couldn't afford to do. So then the cart became an option that we could afford, and a shared kitchen became an option that we could afford. So that's what happened.
But now the business is really growing. I mean, you guys have taken off. So does expansion carry problems of its own? I mean, I spent a lot of time in Vermont, mm-hmm. watched what happened to Ben and Jerry's.
Yep.
So, you know, they had to answer all sorts of questions as they went along. Are you facing now, obviously at a different stage,
yeah.
some of the same questions?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, no matter how hard you try, you lose touch as you grow. I mean, it used to be I was creating and handing off every popsicle that we made, and now, whereas I'm very, very involved every day still, that's just at the scale we're at, it's just not possible anymore. So, yeah, I mean, each day is a new challenge. We just approach it. I mean, seems simple, but try to do the absolute best we can. And it seems to be working so far.
But in the process, do you have a set of, let's say, standards to guide you? In other words, do you say, I don't want to get so big that I can't do X? And is that even possible to do?
Yeah, we have those written internally, and something that's it's not really internal. Just we don't know if other people are interested. We plan to stay in the South. We plan to have kitchens where we're making our own pops, relatively close. That's a loose term that we're still trying to define. But for example, we're in Charlotte or Charleston, and they have their own kitchens and they deal with their own farmers, and they're in touch with their own customers. And I think that does kind of put a lower ceiling on us for how quickly and how fast we could grow because of the way we're going about it.
So are you decentralized and centralized at the same time?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that really comes from Atlanta, we do a lot more of the wholesale here, but if they were selling to a small mom and pop shop in Charlotte, they would still buy locally. So
we're speaking with Steve Kars. He's the CEO and co-founder of King of Pops, and we're talking about how the business got started here in Atlanta and how it's grown. So let's talk about the product here. You have a lot of different flavors. You know, Dennis mentioned Ben and Jerry's, which has a lot of great flavors.
Mm-hmm.
Does a flavor just hit you at 2:00 in the morning and you say, oh, chocolate mint? Or, you know, how do you guys come up with all these different flavors?
It's a mixture of everything you could ever imagine. We might be at a bar and get inspired by a drink, or we might just have two fruits laying around that we have to do something with, or we might have sat down in a meeting and thought about it.
What's a meeting
really
like at the King of Pops? What's a meeting?
The meeting would be like standing at a stainless steel table trying to decide what we're going to do in 5 minutes from now.
Is there a flavor that someone came up with and you thought it would work and then you were like, nah?
I mean, you think everything will work, but yeah, I mean, We do a lot of we did a fig and goat cheese one that we thought would be good, but it was
Are
like
you serious, Steve. Fig and goat cheese.
It was really heavy. It was like eating an entire meal.
I don't know how you could even get them into the same popsicle.
Yeah. Was that your idea? Or you want to blame it on somebody else?
I don't even remember anymore.
Fig and goat cheese.
You got to take the good with the bad.
So then the question of money comes up. I mean, you talked about expanding into new areas. In order to do that, you're going to need a lot of capital. So as a business expands, is it easier to get financing, or because you're looking for more money, is it still as tough as it was at the beginning?
It's different. We bootstrap it when we go into a new city. We don't buy them the fanciest new kitchen, and they don't have like a fleet of new trucks. So it's guys that are in situations where they kind of want to be gritty and are okay with getting in there and just doing the hard work. So we've never had financing, so we don't really know anything about it. So I don't know if that answers your question.
So you use profits that you've already made to subsidize whatever expansion you do?
Correct.
Okay. Does that mean you franchise, or is everything still under your umbrella?
Everything's still under the same umbrella. We have some partners that share, like in profits in the other cities. So
from carts into some distribution in some local areas, that's pretty much how you generate your revenue?
Yeah, I mean, there's three major parts of our business. We've got the carts, which is how we started. That's seeing us at festivals and on street corners. Then the wholesale, which is like Whole Foods or Buddies or anyone that's selling inside of a store. And then the third is one that we never really expected, which is the fastest growing, and that's catering. And that's when a business buys it ahead of time for their customers or for someone else for some type of an event or wedding or really anything. And that's a big part of our business now as well.
And so, Steve, with this, because you weren't a business owner before, you're still learning how to be a business owner with all this. What are some of the things that you've learned then?
Oh, man. I think the biggest thing is just be transparent. So when you make a mistake, if the people that you've been selling pops to that come up to the corner, I don't know if it's even a mistake, just kind of let them in, allow them to kind of enjoy your success, but also help you out along the way. If they've got a good idea of where to set up or a new flavor idea, why not try it?
And listen when they say the fig and goat cheese is not happening.
Exactly.
What about quality control? Because, again, any business, whether it's popsicles or computers, they have to maintain quality control while they expand. Has that been one of your biggest challenges, and how do you address that?
It's a big challenge for sure. We address it by the inputs more than anything else. We do believe that if we're getting the very best ingredients and we're only using 3 to 4 to 5 ingredients in a popsicle, they can mess it up, but that's gonna take a big part of that risk out. And then after that, it's just people know if it tastes good or not, and just letting them feel empowered to pull it if it is bad.
Yeah, but by the time, let's say, the consumer says this isn't so good, it's too late.
That's
so
true.
How do you ensure before it gets to them that with bigger and bigger production, you're still able to keep track of make sure that the stuff is good?
Oh, man. I mean, you could never be 100% sure. We take good care of when we're producing it, and then when it's going into the freezer, we check it, and then when it gets out of the freezer, we check it. But at some point, you can't taste every single one, or else you wouldn't be able to sell any.
Well, and that brings, and keep in line with that, because you hear so often now in the news about, well, you look at what happened with Bluebell, or you look at what happened with anything, with
For
any
sure.
product, you
it's
know,
really
what measures are you going to make sure that, you know, the product is safe and not and free of bacteria as much as possible before it even gets out of, you know,
yeah,
into
that,
the...
those are things that are just beyond, like, what I started out doing. So, you know, you bring people in. We have food safe certified people in there working that are keeping an eye on those type of things. But it is something that you always just consistently have to be aware of.
All right.
Do you ever do, real quickly, do you ever do a worst case, like a rehearsal? I mean, whether it's food safety or whether it's a problem with production or whatever it happens to be, do you run through how you address consumers if something happens? Because things happen.
Yeah. I mean, we're lucky. We don't, in the winter, we have done that before because it's slow and you can sit down and think about it. One thing that we're really lucky about is we've got a really in tune audience. So we have a direct channel to communicate through them through social media, but also, yeah, I mean, you need to have a plan in place for if something is going bad.
We've been speaking with Stephen Karse. He's a CEO and co-founder of King of Pops. You've probably heard of him and seen him around Atlanta, and about how the business has grown. And you can find out more about going to our website at wabe.org and click on the Closer Look tab. Now, if you do want some inspiration for another, I mean, rose minted something or you know, something.
What's speaking to you right now?
Something with walnuts and chocolate and, yes, mint. What do you think, Dennis?
I like that.
Yeah.
Go for that.
The Closer Look.
All right. We'll call it that.
Yeah. I don't know. Something. Aren't you glad I'm not on your marketing team?
Yeah, that's a great job.
It's 1-7.
Hey, it beats your fig and goat cheese.
I think we got about 400 successful ones. So.
Where?
What, go on our website?
Let's see the data on that, Stephen.
I don't know. Depends on you how you define success, I guess.
That's a good answer.